All right, good morning, everybody. So when I was putting the program together, several of the leaders I spoke to in the industry talked about the labor shortages that they've been facing. And a couple of them specifically said, man, I wish I could get women to apply to my manufacturing roles. You know, I have a few, wish I had more. Feels like 50% of the population isn't even giving us a chance. But I'm probably doing something wrong, and I probably don't know it. And so I started thinking about that a little bit, and I thought, you know what? I probably don't know what we're doing wrong either. So why don't we ask some women in the industry? So these three women all graciously volunteered after I asked to be on the panel. I think some are a little more nervous than others. But today really is just meant to be a conversation to learn from their perspective about what we could do as an industry to recruit and retain more women. And I'm sure some companies maybe they're doing great and they're perfect. Other companies probably aren't doing very well. But I think all of us will learn from this perspective. So I'll ask them to introduce themselves, and I'll ask the audience for some questions. If you have something, I've got obviously some prepared questions, and they also have some topics they're passionate about. So I'm pretty sure we can talk for an hour. But it's really meant to be a conversation so that we all learn and walk out of here with another perspective on our business and on our industry. So with that, I'll ask each of you to introduce yourselves.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Brianna Gray. I'm currently with Scotts Miracle Grow. I started manufacturing period at a very young age as an intern. Have a degree in finance, so I've grown very much so in my leadership style, and I've experienced so much throughout different organizations and landed with Scotts not too long ago. So I'm even younger in mulch and soil and that's in this industry in general. But I love what I do, and I'm very passionate about it.
Tanya with Grant County Mulch, second generation. My parents started the business in 1986, so I didn't really have a choice. Although I thought I did, so I decided to get a social work degree, and now I work in accounting every day. Not the best decision in college, but I love the industry. I think it's a tight-knit industry. We're all friends, so I couldn't imagine myself doing anything other than this.
Good morning, everybody. Katie Blaylock. I'm currently with New Earth Compost. I graduated from Sam Houston State University with a degree in agriculture and a master's in animal science agriculture. I started working in the poultry industry, so I went totally different, opposite of soil and mulch, but currently back in the soil and mulch industry and loving what I do. I do quality control, so I have the niche and the eye for seeing different things and just love the challenge every day.
All right. Thank you. I'll look to the audience first. Does anybody have any questions they want to put before the panel? Thought we might be a little shy this morning, so I'll go ahead and kick it off. Brianna, you are the newest to the industry. I think, 2 years?
Not even that.
Not even 2 years. So you had a lot of choices. What attracted you to this industry?
So in general, manufacturing, as a kid, always interested how things work, how things come together, how to solve problems. Growing up, I was a grandpa's like kiddo, not even a dad's girl. So with him on the roof or watching heavy equipment or in his way while he's trying to put up a fence. And then like later in life, I developed a huge passion for working with people and then leading teams. I was in sports for a little bit, so I got to interact with some great, phenomenal people putting together, coming together. And then taking all those two things together, two different worlds, blending them, I was able to come to this industry and I get to basically have my cake and eat it too. So it's really seamless for me to step into this role.
All right, now I'll go to Katie. So you were in poultry. I don't know anything about the poultry industry.
Most people don't. It's okay.
But so you chose about 6 years ago to come to this industry?
Yes. So I was 6 years in the poultry industry, and then had some health problems, and then now currently 6 years in the soil and mulch industry. When I was in college, I was doing plant and soil science, and I found that just being in your backyard, growing stuff, doing your own thing is fun. When I started experimenting in college and doing things, I realized that I can do multiple things. Being in this industry, the challenge every day is what really has got me here. Going to work and being just being there and being able to problem solve within the greenhouse. I do quality control, so I'm in the greenhouse a lot. I am mixing different soils, doing different testing, so you can see things and you can help everybody by just changing things, just being there for somebody. It could be a bad day on the line. You can go help somebody and challenge and do that kind of thing. So I just say, like, just being here every day, seeing a different challenge helps a lot. But also within this, I've learned many different aspects. I've started on the line. I've started in the greenhouse. I've driven the forklift, driven loaders, driven 18-wheelers. I can do a little bit of everything through my whole life. So just being able to be next to the guys and say, hey, we can do it too. So that's what we're here for. Just love the challenge.
I look out to the audience. Do we have anybody bold enough to ask a question yet?
Oh, it's fun.
Oh, all right.
John. Let's go.
Well, coming straight out of college, I actually changed my major very late in my career to where I had summer school going from junior to senior. And that was because of an internship that I had in manufacturing. So I didn't even know this industry, not more or less as mulch and soil, but manufacturing was an option. So I was approached in a crowd of people. So I think a lot of organizations are willing to open the door for women to walk through, for sure. I don't feel like any of that has been off the table for us. I think it's more or less visibility that it is an option. I wasn't even aware of it in school.
Just being here and talking to certain people in certain different companies, I can see that there's certain companies that have a culture already set that are willing to accept the women, but there are some companies that don't have that culture. So I guess you could say if there's a bad apple that is holding somebody back from working next to the women, that bad apple might need to go. But at the same time, your whole culture within your company has to be willing to accept the woman or the different race or anybody in general next to that worker. So we just all have to be willing to accept each other and work next to each other.
We were lucky enough at Grant County that, I mean, my mother started the company with my father. So our culture was kind of always, wow, you know, she can drive a loader, she can run a bagging line, she can drive an 18-wheeler. So we have always had that culture. We've been lucky enough to have that culture within our company that if Janie can do it, I can do it. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in that. I didn't know any different, really. And I think that has allowed us, I mean, 20% of our workforce are women. And from driving a forklift, we have a lady, one of our plants, and she's driven a forklift for over 30 years. We have loader operators, we have site managers. So we have created that culture. And I think we all need to get there. Like you said, maybe there are some companies that do not do that, but that's where we have to get to. Not even a little.
I have been some instances. prior to Mulch and Soil, I had like a lot of events where frontline leaders, females, were like, how do I get to be where you are? Being the first person for them to see a female in a role of leadership, I get that question a lot. And it's really the organizations standing up and creating systems and processes that are for promoted for anyone, but it allows the females to step up into a role that normally wouldn't probably present for them. For example, my internship, that entire 2 years, 18 months, I was pretty much, hey, you have to go into this industry, you have to go into this side of the business and excel. So working alongside from the back of the house on a forklift, working with these guys and doing a 6-month stint and then reporting up to my leadership team, what I learned, it forces you to have those communication. And a lot of the team members saw a lot of females go through this program. So they started to see, oh, they can do it, they can keep up with us. And that just became a cultural fit, like these ladies were saying, that it's a streamlined effect where it's consistently females and men going through the cycle, learning the same way, getting the same foundation, and then thus now we're leading these guys later in life.
Steve.
Who has a better attendance,
like women or men? Actually, my mom and I were talking about that this morning. I got a little coaching this morning from the master herself. And she brought up a good point this morning, and I'm not at all taking anything away from the male population, but what we have seen are that women are more passionate about their jobs, so you do see a higher attendance rate with the women versus a man.
Bob?
For sure. So the question was, I was, again, later in my career where I knew that this was something that I could do, I could be passionate about. So what can we do to get more people attracted early on? For sure, starting back in high schools, when I think the age-old questions, like when you're a senior, hey guys, what are you going to go do with the rest of your life? That's the question they all get asked. Go to school or go get a trade, or, you know, mom and dad are going to be there forever. I think headed back to high school, started developing programs. I think visiting those colleges, community colleges, the event that you guys placed on where you got to see vendors and talk to so many different people in the industry, those type of events, but with the organizations to these young folks. More or less, I think we've all seen everything change in the last few years. We have new careers developing that are more outshine. Social media is now a career someone can choose and can go to college for. I didn't know that was even an option, but that's more highlighted than manufacturing, which has been around since day one. So for sure, just being visible.
Jenny?
For companies here that they say this is an opportunity to increase the pool of people that you hire from, what is your recommendation for recruiting those people, women specifically, in labor intensive roles where they're not seen? Because anywhere the university is now, we do find these graduates in sales and marketing and all of that, but they're not looking at labor jobs at all. And so what's the recruitment tactic to get them?
And that was actually supposed to be my question, so I'll go ahead and answer that, Joe.
Yeah, good.
That how do we get the word out there for women? And I conducted a survey with all the women in our company, and simple things. You know, when you're advertising for a manufacturing role, make sure that it's known, John would probably help us with this, making sure we're politically correct, that, you know, this position is available for a male or a female. Simple things like that. And I'm not sure how you would do that politically correct in this day and age, but it's an issue.
Right.
So, but I do know some advising nonprofits who are employers as well on certain things. So that if you want to be more fair, for example, in the HR operations and so forth, if you're going to have a picture of your workplace, a picture of, you know, this job is open, whatever, and there's a picture of somebody at a desk.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Make sure that there's a woman at the
or a picture of a lady on a forklift.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's, yes.
In other words,
don't automatically assume that what you're doing is relegated only to men. And sometimes with the older people in the office, it depends a little bit on whether or not the HR stuff is being made up by a man or a woman. Women are obviously more sensitive to these kinds of issues.
I think the question, another comment was made within the company is, like, on your applications and on your posts and everything, if you put male and female, I mean, is that politically correct?
Yeah.
We can do that. Like, so a lot of people just put, this job is open, and they don't specifically put male and female or anything like that. So just leave it open and put it both, because
right.
People are going to apply for it.
And the bigger organizations sometimes have mentor programs.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
Designed to bring women along.
Pat, do you have a question?
I just want to make one comment about being a woman and working in the industry. I think maternity leave is very important for the woman. If we provide them extended time, they can take vacation or paid absence. If we give them a comfort level when they have a baby, they will still work, they can still support the family. I think it's the biggest comfort level being woman working in the industry. It's just my idea.
No, and that's absolutely the truth. With the surveys, the consensus was this is a family-first organization. You know, we're going to have to leave. If our children get sick, I'm going to go. And we have created a culture that's okay. Obviously, you know, maybe larger companies can't be so lenient, but that was definitely the consensus from our population that we have created a family-first organization. And those things are going to come up, and we have to take those things seriously.
I agree with you.
I'd like to add just a small touch to that. So that's one thing coming from, like, a different generation too, is that, you know, a lot of women that are entering the workforce, they're not entering a lot with that family first mindset. One, they don't have a family. A lot of kids nowadays aren't having kids very young, very early in life. So a lot of when they're looking for a potential job, it's a career job. And they like to hear that, oh, in the future they can develop and they can have that time off. But it's coming off strong with, no, we're going to develop you. We're going to get you to where you go in your career. So when you do develop that family, you have a very strong foundation. I think women coming into this workforce right now are definitely looking at stability. Some are looking for longevity, more or less before family first. And that's just something to remind a lot of leaders to say, hey, you know, when these females are coming or women are coming into the workplace, how can I make sure they stay for longer so they can have those benefits and those, and when they come back, that culture is built for them to be reaccepted into the workforce. Because I think women especially are scared to leave for those events in their
yes,
lives.
Yes, yes.
And for the recall that comes when they come back as well. They're like, am I going to be looked at the same way when I leave and come back? So for me,
yeah.
For example, I want to make sure I have a strong career so when I leave and come back, I'm coming back to a safe culture and environment that I'm accepted in.
And not be viewed as a weakness.
Yes.
At that point.
For sure.
Thanks, Adi. Yeah, one question is more about women in a leadership role. I own a manufacturing business. We print plastic bags, which is very male-dominated. My daughter works for me.
And eventually I would like her to move into, you know, the leadership role in the company, running the company. And we supply the lawn and garden industry, which again is very male-dominated. What would you say to inspire her that's next to me to take that role?
You go.
What's the key to the success in doing that?
I think with us, I have two sisters that are also involved in the company. And Ethan may disagree with me. However, we were held to a higher standard. You work harder, you try your best, and they are going to come down on us quicker than they will anyone. I think you have to teach, obviously, sense of entitlement is a really big thing with my parents. So, you know, I started out cooking in the kitchen in the evenings when I was in high school. You know, it's if you need to sweep the floor, you're going to sweep the floor. So, and I think that also with your employees, they will gain the respect of your employees that, listen, you know, Tanya will jump in this loader and she'll do whatever's needed to be done. And just make them know you will earn your respect. It's not just an automatic.
That's what, to go along with that, I would say, just make sure you're working next to your people. Like,
yes.
Don't feel like you're above them, ever. Always work next to them. Do the job that they're doing. Do the job that you're asking them to do, and they're going to respect you more. But start at the bottom, learn the company,
yes,
and go all the way to
yes,
the top. You got it.
100%.
For sure, I think the biggest takeaway is just be patient. That's the hardest thing to do when you're young, and then as a female as well. It's not who's the loudest, even though I have a very loud voice when I'm at work. I project very well.
Yeah.
But it's not being the loudest, the fastest, the quickest. It's having that patience and that tenacity to stay at the bottom a little bit longer than maybe your male counterparts. It's going to happen. But you'll attract, I don't know how the saying goes, like you attract more honey than that saying.
Yeah, bees with honey.
Yeah,
than vinegar. Ask my mother. She knows that one.
What's up, Mom?
But you do. You'll build those lifelong, relaxing relationships as a female leader by doing this technique and being patient.
100%.
Thank you.
Yes. I think most everybody has a 50-pound limit, but I mean, be honest with you, right now, if there's somebody that comes in that wants to work, I mean, we all need labor, so let them work, and then, hey, let's build a program that we can help you build muscle. I mean, I can stand there and teach you how to lift weights all day long. You know?
Like, I hope I don't have to do that.
We're all at the same boat right now. We're labor's labor, so if they're coming in and you have a female that wants to work your bagging line, by all means, let them work your bagging line. Honest to goodness, females, as far as me, quality control, we pay attention to a lot of detail. So
yes,
if they're working your bagging line, they're going to pay attention to detail. They're going to learn that line. Maybe they're going to be your next mechanic. They're going to rebuild the line. Who knows? But help them out. Like, we can all have a ergonomically correct program that we can lift weights and be ready to lift 50 pounds. We can do it.
I mean, we have too much technology and too much advancement in those processes where I think 50-pound weights or lifting or bending techniques are even really a contention. I think in the interview, my manager really said, like, if I see you picking it up, I'm going to say, hey, there's a teammate. Why haven't you called for help? We don't want anyone going home with any injury, any problem, any issue. So at that point, you lean on, hey, let's be a team here, guys. You don't have to be a superhero. You don't have to pick up 50 pounds worth of bags. So as a leader, if we continue to strike the safety part that we need to talk about a lot more than the physicality of each candidate that comes in, you also create a different culture as well.
Katie, I think we're going to have to update your bio/fitness instructor. Is that right?
Let's go. Work out in the morning, 4 o'clock.
Wow, I need help.
Other questions? Oh, Ash.
Thank you for your kind words of advice and encouragement. I did have a quick question for anyone. Have you ever had an experience where you have been disrespected in the workplace or not listened to specifically, and how did you overcome that?
My mother's had that for 37 years. And it is, it truly, and I don't want to get on a, surely not a soapbox, however, when, you know, she was just as involved, is just as involved, and built the business right along with my father. And for us, one would have never made it without the other. He was the dreamer, and she kept him in line. So, but when she speaks, she is not as respected as him. So it is an issue for sure. And if he speaks, then, oh, okay, Larry said it, we've got to do it. But women are viewed, I think in some cases, that, well, she just must be having a bad day, or she's just really mouthy today. So it is definitely an issue. I've seen that for my entire life. Now, I think that our industry is, it's made a turn. I mean, you know, 20 years ago, I would have to imagine, Bob, this room didn't have hardly any women in it. And now we have, you know, I mean, I'm on the board with Kay and Kimberly, and we're seeing women in leadership roles. So I think now women are taken more seriously than what they have been the last 37 years.
Coming new into being just a leader and then a female leader, and I'm younger than most of the people that report to me, right? So I get that one individual that likes to buck the system and say no in front of 13, 14 people, of not even my peers, my direct reports. Take those opportunities very, very critically, because this is gonna set the tone for you as a leader moving forward. So to her example, don't be, you know, emotional, because immediately it's like, oh, you're female, that's your response.
Good point.
Yeah. It's when you grow as a leader, find a mentor, male and female. But when you have those examples, go to those male mentors that have grown through the organizations and say, how would you deal with it? And just understand, and then also take into consideration your leadership style that you grow into, because that's what you're going to lean on. And in those quick flight or fight responses, you have to be able to keep your composure and keep who you are intact, because that's going to be what really resonates with your team, because they're looking forward to your response, how they think you are. How they think you should. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So please, like, you know, develop who you are. Be very, very stable in that and concrete, and then develop your leadership style on how you're going to respond to just a plethora of responses. And then always in the back of your mind, you think of, like, how does it perception look as a female when I do these things? So for sure.
That's very good advice. Thank you very much.
Other questions?
Hi, Tanya. As a leader at one of the largest companies in the industry, and being on the board and having been in just about every possible role I think you can have at a mulch and soil company, what advice would you give, you know, you've got a lot of leaders in the room, what advice would you give them about recruiting and retaining women?
I think, and once again, from talking to the women at our company, what they are saying is, you know, mutual respect. I think flexible hours is a good thing. One lady said, listen, she's on a bagging line. She has been a bagging line operator for 20 years, and they're on 4/10s. So that gives her the ability to be at home one day a week. That's important. That's important for women. Obviously, close to home was another thing, you know, especially for mothers. You want to be close to your home. You want to be close to your children if something happens. And obviously, you know, we talked about creating a culture that is family-oriented, family-first. So I think that's what, and working remotely was something that, and obviously we're all kind of dealing with that now, that was something that was mentioned as well.
Rob?
Yeah, it's just so important from a leadership perspective for the guys in here. If you're not actively and intentionally developing some diversity with women on your leadership team, I actually think you're missing out. I know a lot of it has been, can women lift as much or what? I would contend in aggregate, Jan Kellogg was obviously part of the family until she passed away and was CEO for many years. People would talk to her. I would learn more through her than would ever come to me. And so we've been really intentional continuing to try and develop that legacy. One of our owners is female now, still. And we've got a female on our leadership team and HR, and I think it's a mistake if you're not intentionally making that a priority. It's not about can they be as good as men. Are they in aggregate as strong as it? I don't know, probably not. But they have other strengths that I don't have in aggregate. And so it's not about building exact clones of guys, but building a team. And that takes different people with different strengths. And so that's been my experience. I'm just curious, Tanya, and all, if that's kind of how you think about it in leadership. And
yes,
know.
I think that one of the ladies wrote, most businesses need both male and female leaders to keep a good balance in the workplace. And that struck me, and I thought, wow, that is the truth. I think we bring a different perspective to the table. So I think that is one of the things as an industry that we need to look at.
I mean, it's also, there's a saying that I do live by, if you're the smartest person in the room, find a new room. It's the same thing if you look out into your workforce, you look at the table that's making the decisions for the people that are reporting to you. If everyone looks the same, if everyone's doing the same thing, then we have to change it. You know, you have to look at it as, if there's not a mix of everything that is representative of your customers, your consumers, then you're not going to make those decisions that will actually even, you know, be something for those guys or something that's representative that they're going to want and need in the future. And I think that's the biggest thing that keeps the three of us in our industry is that we're representing a very small group of people, myself included, just being not only a female workplace, but a female of color in the workplace. I enjoy the challenge of leading this small little trailblazer, you know, that people behind me can come along and see that this is a path that they can take, for sure. So it's just making sure that everyone's represented it collectively and making those big decisions that, I mean, we're dealing with people's lives every day as leaders. You're influencing how they're going to go home and interact with their families. And you know, when they come here, they're going to spend more time at work than they are at home. So for sure, we want to make sure it's a very impactful and safe and developing area for these guys, for these people.
I think the biggest thing that we talk about is treat each other like family. You're all there. Again, you're at work more than you are at home. So you're going to work with these people day in and day out. So treat them like family. We're all humans. We're not like just machines working there. So if they have a problem, have the door open. Be willing to accept them. Let them come into your office. Let them vent to you. Let them talk to you. Just help them out. Treat them like family.
Other questions from the group?
Good number of nurseries, and one of them has transitioned so that all the physical labor in the nursery is done by women. And his comment to me was, it was difficult to hire people, so he reached out more broadly, and this is who came. And he said, just sort of by accident, he noticed that his lost days at work due to injury were reduced to nearly zero. And he said it had to do with the attitude that if something was heavy, two of the women wouldn't mind stepping in and picking it up together while the gentleman chose to pick it up alone.
Yeah.
So.
Other questions?
Watch it. Joe's going to be the star.
We talked about weights and some accommodation for lifting, et cetera. Do you make other accommodations like shift scheduling so the mothers can be home when the kids get back from school, or how do you handle those kinds of considerations?
You got it? I do not. Most locations I've worked at don't make those considerations. It's even when women do come up to me like, hey, Brianna, I have to get home, I have to take care of the kids, and like, you have a partner, you have someone that can help you, you got the family member. I push them to look outside of themselves being the first responder. And then technology has been very useful. So the only, I think, thing I do it with anyone and everyone, is like, you want to make a phone call, a 15-minute break, let's move it up, let's get you know, make those connections. And, you know, you can be a breadwinner too mentality on the situation. I think by default we look to the females in most of the households to take on, hey, you leave work, you go do this, but I think if, you know, as a leader, I challenge them to even look outside of that scope as well.
I think flexible hours is a big thing with women and mothers. Like I said, the 4-10s was a huge thing. It allowed them to be home one day a week. And I think you have to be lenient. If you're going to attract women and mothers, you do have to be lenient, because that is our number one responsibility. You know, raising our children are that is our number one responsibility, and that does come first. Like I said, create a culture where you embrace that. I mean, and once again, we're a small family-run organization. However, I think that is still a pretty big percentage in this crowd. I mean, you know, take your kids to work. I know that's not possible. Not possible with every organization. I mean, most of the time we have babies running around or children and dogs running around our office. And I understand you can't do that on a daily basis, but you do have to be lenient with that. If they need to go home and they need to leave, I mean, I was trying to figure out this morning, how am I going to get out of here and not miss my 17-year-old soccer game this evening? So it is important. And as an industry, we have to embrace that and support ladies however we need to do that.
I think also being in the management level, it goes back to working next to your peer, next to your coworkers. If somebody has to go and you don't have somebody to fill in for them, hey, I'll do it. What's a couple of hours to be in that spot to learn what they're going through daily and to see it? Maybe you can make changes. Maybe you can fix that problem within the 2 hours that you are working that spot. So I think as management, we need to step in as well and fill in that hole.
And I assure you that she will not forget that tomorrow, and she'll work harder for you tomorrow because you did that for her.
So most of our plants, you know, some of them are aging and old, and they're dirt plants. And so just the aesthetics of our plants, you know, may not appeal like some other industry, but from your perspective, yeah, what can companies do just for facilities, bathrooms, break rooms, things like that, to help improve on, you know, making women want to come work there?
So that has been a big question that I ran into my whole career. I've been in three different places, well, more than three, but just saying, in general, when I came out of college and went to work, being a female and walking into a male-dominant field, the restroom is the biggest problem. If you don't have two restrooms within your facility, please look into it and make changes. If women come in there and they want a job and you're giving them a tour or doing something and they don't see a separate bathroom, most likely they're not coming back. It is a big issue because, personally, I don't like going to the restroom behind a man. No offense, but some of y'all can be pretty dirty. So it's just one of those things. Look into it. If you need a separate one, maybe in your office, this is just for females. Maybe in your plant, you know, you don't have the space in your plant, so the female has to go to the office. That's fine, but make sure that that female or that person knows that there's an option for a different restroom. That's always been a problem. Just the other day, I was at a huge facility, and I was doing a tour, and I walked through their maintenance shop and their mechanics and everything, and I'm looking around, and I see men's locker room. There's a locker room for the men and their mechanics, and I said, well, where's the women's locker room? He goes, we don't have one. What if I want to be the first woman mechanic? What are you going to do? Do you have the woman's locker room? So there's a lot of little things, bathroom, locker room, things like that, that you have to look into and maybe end up changing some of your facilities. But it's an issue.
It's a great point.
I think just past that, uniforms, not just coming from where I worked in the uniform industry, but it, you know, we all look at it. You play on a team, everybody has the same jersey, everybody has the same color. Since I've been in these industries outside of CentOS, I've seen where females and women lack getting their uniforms in a timely manner. So when you look out to the crowd and you see, you know, your workforce working, you can immediately spot the different person, and it's usually a woman. They're still in their home-drawn jeans or T-shirt, waiting for, oh, my size don't fit, or this isn't here. So when you're getting acclimated into a new team, into a new work environment, what's the first thing you want to do? Is you want to belong to them? You want to feel a part of that organization? And when I look to my workforce and I see my female or my women, they're not in uniform. And they look different. And unfortunately, my team members will treat them a little bit differently. They're like, oh, they're not one of us yet. Even though they got hired on the same day, they're doing the same job. And if you don't have uniforms, that's a big thing. It takes away, hey, we're all one team, one jersey, one name brand. We're here for a reason. At the end of the day, it's we're here to work. Once you button up that last button, it's work time. And that's how I treat my team. I'm like, guys, that's why uniforms are important. It takes away the individuality of, you know, well, this is why I'm here. This is why we have to have some commonality that keeps us focused. So for me, I've noticed that I will call my uniform company up if I see a female coming in to work and get their uniforms earlier, get some temps in earlier. I work a little bit harder to make sure they feel accepted and already in my team and on my workforce. But I've noticed that 6 to 8 weeks before they're comfortable in their clothes and working, compared to a 3-week turnaround for my males, for sure.
Question. What can, or is there anything that the council can do to help you recruit more female workers and all other members? Again, with this knowledge gap, can we do something that would help you inform people that this is an option?
One of the ladies answered the question on the survey that, What can we do? Marketing. Let the industry know the success that you've achieved with women in upper management. You know, sometimes as women, we don't want to self-promote and, you know, come across as you have an ego the size of Texas, as my husband tells me. So we are more laid back as far as promoting ourselves and being in a leadership role. So I think as an industry, as a council, we need to embrace that. But like I said, we've got Kay and Kimberly who are awesome women. You know, do some spotlights in the industry. Maybe put something in the newsletter, things like that, to get it out in the industry.
And I mean, that goes back to all of us. Like, if you have a woman in your workforce that's doing good, I don't know how many of you actually do, like, employee of the month or anything like that, but I mean, if you have a good woman in the industry that's doing her job and doing what she's supposed to, employee of the month. Don't be scared to do a challenge, to do something within your company. Set goals for these women that are the same as the men. If they reach the goal, here's a prize. Like, just challenge. Stay with the daily challenge. But if you do have a woman that's doing something good, I mean, send it in, and we can put it in the newsletter. We can do different things. But I think within all of us, we need to show it from one company to the other so others will see it.
Tanya, I've got an impromptu question based on what you just said. Well, recently, you know, I had a position that we posted. There was about 10 qualifications or desired sort of experience that we had. And I had a male apply that I was shocked, thought that he was qualified. And when I had the conversation with him, he said, well, I know three of these things. I pretty much got this, which I didn't agree with that assessment, but I did. I was like, wow, that's pretty bold. And then there was a woman that did not apply who I thought was a shoo-in, who I actually expected to apply. And when I spoke to her, she said, I only know 7 of the 10 things that you want. And of course, I thought, well, 7 to 10 is pretty good. And you know, I encouraged her to apply, and she interviewed and got the position. But you know, it made me think. You know, and I don't want to be stereotypical, but is that a difference in how, you know, men and women look at those positions? I mean, from you know, there's three of you. I know we don't want to. You know, every person's different, but any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I think that's where confidence plays a role. And once again, you know, we can do anything that a man can do. However, I mean, you have to have that confidence, and she probably didn't have enough confidence in thinking, wow, you know, I only know 7 out of 10. I'm like you, that's pretty good. And, you know, you have a gentleman walk in that knows 3 out of 10, and he thinks he's going to get the position. So as a company, you guys did the right thing. And putting that, you know, giving her that position, which is going to open up for other females, like, wow, you know, such and such, she applied for that position, she got it, so they are creating that culture. Very important.
Yeah, just, you know, because my first thought after that was, how many times have we had a position and, you know, was there a qualified female candidate, somebody that would have been good, that maybe we would have preferred to hire, but they took themselves out of the running without ever even talking to management or anybody about it? And, you know, how do we prevent that from happening? Because we want the best person in each job.
Yeah, regardless.
At that point, regardless.
And I think by putting women in more leadership roles, other women will see that.
I think also going on with that is if you obviously knew her or knew she was in your business and you were encouraging her, so maybe she didn't apply and there's a deadline, but as a group you can go and talk to her and mentor, like, hey, are you sure you don't want to do this? And just having that confidence of going to those employees that you think will help and say, hey, this job is open, maybe you should apply. And it's got to be across the board. Everybody's got to be treated equal. So it's not like you're pushing her to take that spot because you want her over him, but you need to encourage to make sure everybody sees that you're willing to do it. And that's where I was going back to the application process, is make sure it says male and female, because a lot of them, they're just going to look past it that it's a male-dominated field and they're not going to fill it out. I know personally many of heavy equipment operators that are females that, mm-hmm. that want to do the job, but again, it's the culture that we have to build, that woman is going to be accepted working in a loader next to that male. And it all goes back to starting from the ground up and us being in those roles and working next to our employees and building that culture.
I think from a leadership standpoint too, it's a broader thing that we're not doing correctly, which is rewards and recognition, right? So for one thing too, it's we all know there's more men in the workplace than women. Men will automatically always congratulate each other for the small things, the biggest wins. They have a cheerleading team for them rooting, so they're always going to feel empowered. That's why those 3 out of 7, he's like, I got this, because he's been built up, you know,
yes.
through days and days working with his team. Whereas a female, they don't have that large gathering around them. So as a leadership team, are we recognizing to where she feels comfortable to take that role, that she has gotten the recognition over a long period of time, where this is something acceptable for me? Now, we do try a little bit lightly, because you don't want to feel like you're going, hey, you did really good today, only solely to her. So to their point, consistently being
equal,
creating a standard, creating an expectation. When anyone surpasses that, and every time you're, like, for example, you're female, you're women, if they did 7 out of 10, did you congratulate, did you reward those 7 out of 10 consistently, so that it kind of overshadows a little bit of just that male having 3 out of 10, and he's gotten like that pat on the back from his teammates consistently. That's a really big thing as women and men, as leaders, are we doing that? Because everyone, if you feel like you're a candidate for that role, you should feel confident in it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't, it's because you haven't gotten encouragement from what you've already done. So I think from just the start of that, are we doing the recognition and the reward system that can showcase anyone's talent in the room?
And I think it is an industry, as a very small industry, we do a very good job at supporting other women. I don't think that is the norm. Typically, women don't support other women that I've seen. But I think as an industry, we do a really good job at that, at supporting each other and lifting one another up.
For sure.
You know,
we're all going to have bad days.
Yes.
Yeah, along those lines, Sonny, I was asked, and I don't see the person asked me last night, but somebody from Fall Tech. They belong to the NCMA, which is the Concrete Masonry Association, and they also ICPI, which is Interlocking Concrete Pavers. Both of those associations, evidently, even though Oldcastle belongs to them, I'm not active in those groups. They evidently have a women in industry sort of, you know, sub association. Is that something that we should consider for the Mulch and Soil Council group?
I think that's a wonderful idea. And I think we have an awesome group of women in this room that would be very well represented.
For the Texas, the TNLA, we do in Texas, we have a women's group just for that area and everything within Texas. So it works out well. We do have a large group that comes and participates, and we all share ideas. We all talk about it. We had lunch at the conference and do everything together. So I think it would be good.
Jenny, did you have a question?
I was going to say, in Texas, we have women in horticulture, and it's growing. We have quarterly Zoom phone meetings where we get together and discuss topics at the end, and it's either being able to give other leaders advice and something that's really great. So,
That sounds pretty unanimous. So Bob, I think we got a new assignment, Bob. So, but other questions? Okay, I think we've got about 5 minutes. Yeah, Shelley, give me the 5 minutes. Let me ask you this. So what are there any maybe stories or examples that any of you'd like to share about, you know, leaders, mentors, you know, behavior that we can look to emulate as leaders in the industry? Or maybe not emulate, I guess, if you don't have any. Hopefully you got something that we could emulate, but if.
I had an incident happen, and this is just something that is a byproduct of having a lot of these conversations, right? Having a lot of women in ops organizations within bigger organizations. I do my frontline team. We did a women in ops for frontline development. The first thing I got when all the women left the floor was I had individuals, men like, hey, what about me? That's a big cautionary tale to, I think, when we're progressing and we have these conversations and we do these type of events, and especially within an organization and we're using frontline, they see it. They'll see that. So the reaction and the leadership that we say and what we do after is very important. But you know, to that young man or to that gentleman, I was like, we have a men in ops too. We're going to go over here and work while they're working. So, but just make sure you have a balance. Make sure you're consistently being you are orchestrating the story. You're saying, hey, well, we want to get more females in the workplace to help with the labor shortage. So this is how we got to go do it. We have to do the work. But know that that can be a byproduct of some of these conversations, for sure.
Yeah, to that point, a lot of ladies said to me, our site supervisor doesn't treat us any different, yeah. And we love that. You know, they don't ask us to do anything that they wouldn't ask a male, and vice versa. So it's all about mutual respect. You know, you don't want to take it the other way, where you think the women are getting better treatment. So it's just about respect, mutual respect.
Culture.
Culture, yeah. Exactly.
Let's build the culture. Keep everybody on the same playing field. Just treat everybody equal, and we'll get there.
Any last second questions before we wrap it up? No? All right, well, thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank
and
you.
I think. I think, Bob, we've got a break now.